Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor Frances McDormand. So here is the quick look at her background. Adopted by a nurse and a Disciples of Christ minister in Canada. Goes on to get a BA in theater from Bethany College in 1979 and then an MFA from Yale University in 1982. Like a lot of the people we end up talking about on our show, Mike, she starts off on stage and she has kept up her theater career, you know, throughout her movie career. What gave her her first break was a film called Blood Simple in 1984, where she worked with filmmaker Joel Cohen, who she married that year. So starting there, Mike, anything you want to say about her background leading into Blood Simple, and then take it away with Blood Simple?
Yeah, again, further reminder that here's a movie star who has a strong background in theater. But Marie, you make the really good point that she has periodically returned to the stage. For some actors, once they sort of cross over or evolve, move on, that's it. You're not going to find them on stage again, or only rarely. She periodically has done that. You know, she's got the acting chops and she'll take on roles. She received a Tony nomination for A Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway. She played Stella there. I think she must have been the strongest one on stage, right? And she could probably go like that and knock Stanley out, I guess. She, in 2008, she was in a revival of The Country Girl. And in 2011, she won the Tony Award for a play called Good People, where she plays a troubled single mother. I think she can do a role like that. So again, when you think about how recent some of those credits are, you know, within the past decade, she doesn't need to do that. She can always get movie work, which pays better, right? But I really admire actors who are like that, who periodically return to their roots and are on stage. And she's a very strong person. She has a really strong sense of herself and her, and she plays characters like that, however troubled or insecure, whatever. But no, there's a staunch quality. I love the word staunch. There's a staunch quality to her. And I think it's the reason why she can call the shots on her career oftentimes. You know, she probably has movie offers and says, no, I just got this, you know, Broadway theater offer. Let me do that. You know, and likewise, when she married into the Coen family, how to put this, when she married Joel, you know, started working with the Coen brothers, the fact that look at their filmography, they've done some relatively big commercial, you know, Hollywood movies in their own way. You always know it's a Coen picture, right? But they've also done these really quirky, independent, like just out there in left field kind of things that she'll appear in. And it's like, well, this is not going to be a big box office hit and it's going to have the film critics loving it and maybe a small audience, but you know what? She doesn't care at some level. It's a film she wants to do. So, you know, Blood Simple, let me hand it back to you because there's a lot to say actually about Blood Simple in terms of how it not only launches the Coen brothers' career, but in many ways really kind of launches hers as well. I mean, these people are of the same generation. They're taking off at the same point within the same film. So back to you.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that you admire when actors go back to their theater roots and keep that up, because I think that is something that is a status kind of symbol amongst actors, that the most prestige comes from doing theater work, followed by movies, followed by television, followed by commercials, TV commercials. And interestingly to me, the amount of money you make is inversely proportional to that. The most money is in TV commercials, followed by television, followed by movies. And theater is dead last. And of course, for an actor who wants to get, you know, the performance perfect, you know, on stage, I mean, it's happening live. You don't get to go back and fix it or, you know, redo your line or anything. There's a much more of an immediacy, which makes it seem a little more difficult. You know, you can always do another take with those other three options. And once you've made the money and you can make the money to go back to theater, I agree with you. I find that admirable too, because it seems to be about the craft in the most uncomfortable way to do it, you know, where you have to be completely in the moment and it's very immediate and you're gauging the reaction of the people who are in the audience in real time, where in a movie, you're trying to do what the director wants you to do because you're working with their vision. So I think it actually is a different skill set. And I also admire people who keep up their theater work, when obviously it'd be so much easier to just make all the money doing the movies.
And you know, Marie, here's a very quick analogy. We'll talk presently about all the Academy Awards she's won, okay? But when you start talking about Oscars, you know, and winning multiple Academy Awards for acting, people would mention, you know, and in fact did just the other week when the Academy Awards came around again and she won again, Katharine Hepburn. We can get into the actual statistics in a while. But I saw Hepburn on stage a couple times, you know, late in her career, but she returned to the theater periodically. She didn't have to do that. You know, 7 shows a week, you know, you're an actor in your 80s, you don't need that, right? But in some level, you do need it. You want it, right? And so again, McDormand's been like that. So there is a kind of parallel between her career and Hepburn's in various ways, certainly in terms of winning the Academy Award, but also periodically returning to the theater for all the reasons you've just cited.
Now, in terms of Blood Simple, you know, we always like to talk about where we discovered, you know, whoever it is we're talking about. Now, I did watch Blood Simple on HBO when it came out, but she did not register with me. She did not register with me until Fargo. Going back to see that performance, you know, I don't know how I missed her being a key to the movie. But one thing I did want to say about her in that movie is that she initially saw some of these scripts and saw, okay, there's this sex scene where she's, you know, obviously just, you know, had an intimate moment with another character. And so she said to the producers, oh, is this going to be, I mean, is this about me taking off my clothes, you know, nudity? Is this where we're going here? And he said, no, we're not going to sell this movie on sex. We're going to sell this movie on violence. And when I read that, I thought, oh, that just makes that movie make so much more sense, because that's what stood out to me when I watched that movie was the impending violence that seemed ready to explode at any time. And then, of course, it does. What was your take on Blood Simple, Mike?
I remember seeing Blood Simple at a critics screening, so even before it opened to the public, and just thinking, wow, I like film noir a lot as a genre. And I also like the fact that it was in black and white and it was playing off of the vintage film noir, of course, but already the Coen brothers have their own distinctive sensibility. And your use of the word violence is so apropos here because, you know, the earlier film noir, for reasons of the production code, if nothing else, could only suggest so much. I mean, there was some on-screen violence, but a lot of it off-screen or alluded to. You'd hear the gunshot or somebody was shot, but there's no blood for some reason, right? In Blood Simple, when there's violence. And you can say it's a mixed blessing in terms of, you know, a film being more explicit in terms of violent content. But one of the ways in which the Coen brothers were updating film noir as a genre or as a style, whatever you want to call it, was the fact that for obvious reasons, they could now be more straightforward, blunter, if you will, in their depiction of things like that. And throughout their career, or careers, is it one career or two or three? Anyway, for the Coen brothers, I don't want to turn this into a show about the Coen brothers, but in so many of their films, there are film noirish elements. And I love that from the get-go. I mean, they got my attention with Blood Simple big time. And the fact that I've always, even if some of their films I like more than others, I've always appreciated that film noirish undercurrent that almost always is there to some extent. And they have fun with that. They enjoy it. And I, you know, you should have fun when you're making movies, even if it's a serious and violent film. But in terms of Frances McDormand, she also, of course, Raising Arizona in 1987, I mean, she's working with them. She's doing other work as well. She's getting a few Academy Award nominations for supporting actor throughout her career, but going back to fairly early in it. And she works even with Robert Altman and Shortcuts. I mean, she's doing some really good work. But you know what, Marie? Even though she'd done this good work, films that you mentioned and that I just did, somehow I'm aware of her, but she's not like in the forefront. You know what I mean? Like I'm not thinking about her all the time, but absolutely I am with Fargo. And I'll just say straight out that my favorite Frances McDormand role is still in Fargo when she plays the very pregnant, extensively pregnant Sheriff Marge Gunderson. What a great character. And, you know, she wins the Academy Award, of course, her first Best Actress Academy Award for that role. As Marie and I know very, very well, we used that film Fargo in our Introduction to American Cinema course. It's a survey course. So every year we're watching it and talking about it with the students. And the students generally, I would say, really love that film too. So it's not just like a fan club of two here. My students also really respond to it well. Let me turn it back to you because if I keep talking more about Fargo, I'll fill the rest of our show just with Fargo. But Marie, just your sense of why, you know, this really is one of her signature roles. And to cut to the chase on what you were asking a bit earlier or mentioning a bit earlier, this really is the role that puts her over. Not just getting the Academy Award, but in terms of public recognition. Everyone at this point, frankly, will know Frances McDormand. They've all seen Fargo. It kind of enters the popular culture in a really significant way, I'd say. And people still, you know, has a kind of cult following. People still watch it all the time and talk about it.
Well, before I get into Fargo, because like you, it's a black hole into which we could talk, and we could just do a whole show about Fargo. But before that, there was Raising Arizona that you mentioned, which is a surprisingly funny Coen Brothers movie. You don't expect it, a comedy from them. And then, of course, Mississippi Burning in 1988, which is just a great movie to watch. Anyway, she has a small role in it, but that does get us to Fargo in 1996. Now, for our students who are introduced to the Coen Brothers through Fargo, like you said, it is always a hit of a movie. It's just as violent as Blood Simple. You know, all you have to do is say wood chipper and people are like, yes, I remember that scene. But in it, I think the reason it makes such a star out of her is you've never seen a character like this. Like you said, she is hugely pregnant. She has a role most people associate with men. So not only is she a woman, but she's a very pregnant woman. And she is at no time not 100% in control of the situation. She is never snowed by the obvious lies coming from William Macy. She's just got this sharp mind, and you see her using it throughout the movie in that sort of folksy Fargo, North Dakota way.
You betcha.
You betcha. And it's even a sweet side note that her husband is a painter, and you know, he's trying to decide whether he should feel bad about the fact that the stamp that he has done the artwork for is, you know, just one of those filler stamps, you know, the 1 cent, 2 cent stamps, not the forever stamp. And so she tells him, yeah, but you know, every time they change the stamp to, you know, something of a higher denomination, they've got to get those little ones. It's got these sweet moments. It's got the two of them sitting drinking their coffee, and then her husband goes out to start the car for her. It plays off of stereotypes in a really nice way.
One of the great things about her character is the fact that there are certain gender assumptions that are made. So here you have this criminal story. She is this rural sheriff, and a lot of people just kind of take her for granted or don't credit her with much smarts. She's nice. She's friendly. She's unassuming. You betcha, by golly. And oftentimes when she's actually interviewing people, like at the crime scene or scenes, if you will, people don't take her as seriously as they really should, because they somehow think, well, she's not too swift. She's not too smart. Look at her waddling through the snow and so on. You know what I mean? They don't really take her that seriously. But you know what? She's a smart cookie, and everything registers, and she notices all these things. And this is, again, where McDormand is an actor. She has that strength of character, but she very wisely underplays this role in the sense of she's never overbearing or pushy or aggressive, arrogant. She does just the opposite. She's nice and sweet and all that. But that doesn't mean that she's dull. Do you know what I mean? She's firing on all cylinders. She's noticing everything. But on the surface, she's just this sweet small town sheriff, if you will. It's a great, great performance, because this actor so easily could have like hit the button and really run with it. Like, it's this take charge character. But no, that's not what Marge Gunderson is. So she underplays it that way brilliantly. It's just such an endearing film. And back to you, Marie, on this one. Just of all the films we used during the semester in that American cinema course, I would put on the short list in terms of films that the students really like. And also, it's a very violent film, but it's also a very funny film. And the Coen brothers have that queasy balance of serious violence and humor. And one thing I always ask the students, particularly when we're live in the classroom where you can have that direct give and take to get responses, when I start off our class discussion about Fargo, I'll ask the students, during that wood chipper scene, if you haven't seen the film, all I'll say is it's a very violent scene, okay? During that wood chipper scene, did you laugh? And we get a great discussion going. And if you laughed, did you feel guilty about laughing? And I'll tell you what, from a teaching perspective, you ask that question, and suddenly, if you want to talk about the tone of the film, the whole film opens up to you at that point. And we always have a really strong class discussion, whether Zoom or live in person, wherever. We could be on Mars having the discussion, wherever you have the discussion. Fargo gets students talking, and they all like it, and they all want to talk about it.
Now, you know, you've actually given me planted the seed that we probably need to do an episode about the Coen brothers when we will discuss this at further length. But I just want to, you know, pose the question to you as a fellow film instructor. Fargo is sometimes the gateway drug to all the rest of the Coen brothers movies. And I feel like our students, my students, really, really respond to the Coen brothers. Every semester, there's several people who are big, big fans. You know, since this is, you know, her family, and since she's in so many of these movies, do you have an idea why the Coen brothers resonate so much with our students?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's one of the things we talk about. There's something about the sensibility that they have that, for better or for worse, increasingly in our popular culture, violence being played for laughs, if you will. And I'm reducing it in an almost crude way, but you know, you see where I'm headed here. There's something in the air, something in the zeitgeist, if you will, one of my favorite $10 words. There's something in the zeitgeist there that they came along at just the right moment, like to reinvigorate film. And we talk about Blood Simple because we have watched earlier film noir like Double Indemnity to give a sense of the continuity of the genre over time and how it changes over time in some ways in terms of how explicit you can be of violence, for instance, and sexuality. So anyway, we would talk about Blood Simple anyway. With Fargo, it absolutely resonates because that's a vibe they recognize. They'll remark on how graphic some of the violence is, and some people are upset by it and so on. But for the most part, people realize, yeah, but you know what? That scene was also funny. And then we talk about a great conversation starter as to, well, what's going on there? What does it say about us? I mean, you know, I don't want to have it reduced to, well, we're all sick puppies. I don't mean it that way so much as, you know, there's something in the air there in the cultural climate, and the Coen brothers consistently respond to this. I mean, Marge Gunderson in Fargo, she's a walking, seemingly a walking live action cartoon at times. How can you not smile or laugh? You know, she's heavy with child. She's waddling through the snow. She's talking, and people in the upper Midwest do talk that way. I have relatives and I've been there, you know, the you betcha kind of stuff. They talk that way, but she really talks that way, right? It's very pronounced. And when she starts talking that way, how can you not smile? But meantime, it's a scene surrounded by scenes where there's quite a bit of blood in the snow, if you will. And yet somehow, let's just put it this way. There's a really rich emotional palette, stuff that's serious and meant to be serious. Other stuff that's just goofy, silly, meant to be that. And then those kind of in-between wood chipper kind of scenes where, yeah, it's horrible. It's awful. It's fine. Why am I laughing at this? It's awful. Maybe it's laughter as a defense mechanism sometimes. Something so extreme, your response is like scoff or laugh at it. But we could talk about laughter for a long time too. But they know how to work with that. And Frances McDormand is an actor knows how to play a character like Marge Gunderson so that Marge is just going about being Marge, right? She doesn't realize how funny she is. We laugh at her, but she would kind of look around like, well, what'd I say? This sort of thing, you know, but we laugh at her and we're with her. We're not laughing at her in that sense of, you know, that she's silly or a nincompoop. No, we admire her. She's a really wonderful, lovable person. But some of the stuff she says and the way she moves and all that, it's one reason why other characters don't always take her as seriously as they should. To their peril, right? Because as we said a little while ago, I mean, she's one smart cookie. You know, if you're a criminal, she's going to find out at some point. She's going to get you.
And I like her as a female character, you know, showing stages in a person's life. They actually show her in Fargo, you know, becoming overcome with morning sickness. And then she straightens back up and gets back on the job. In a way, it's kind of daring to throw Marge Gunderson in her, you know, police career. To put the focus on her at the time where she is the most vulnerable and you would think maybe emotional or, you know, maybe not able to, you know, do her job as well. No, she just happens to be pregnant. She's still, you know, like you said, one sharp cookie. And I really like the way that that was put across that way because it just seemed like it's just one other detail. Yes, it's played for laughs in some ways, but it also, I don't know how many times we have seen a pregnant character with that much agency, with that much laser focus on what her job is. So really admire that. And since, you know, honestly, that's like the first image we get of her as like a mother character, I want to quickly glance over a couple of roles that she played where she was in the background, but these are all good movies. One is Primal Fear from 1996, which is what the movie that put Edward Norton on the map. I didn't even remember her being in it until I went back to look at some of the clips to see, you know, where was she in that movie? And then you see her and like you recognize her immediately. Also Almost Famous.
She's a psychiatrist. She plays Edward Norton's psychiatrist. I don't know how I'd feel as a patient going to her as the shrink, but that really is, we'll talk about Edward Norton in some future episode, but I mean, that's really the movie that put him over, that made him known to the general public. And you're right, at the time that movie came out, he got a lot of attention. Marie, for whatever reason, her supporting role. But now, of course, go back and watch it again, and you're right. Then you notice her even more. But that can happen in a film. Like, he was the breakout actor in that, right? That got all the media attention. And she was good. People acknowledged it, but, you know, kind of held back. She's also done a lot of other supporting work. She's received 3 Academy Award nominations for Best Supporting Actress. So she's had other films where she doesn't have to be the lead. She doesn't have to be the star. And that's another thing to admire about her. If it's a role, she wants it. You know, I mean, in Primal Fear, you know, she's not the name above the title there, you know, but you know what? You watch the film and what she's doing, the amount of time she has, how many minutes on screen, she delivers. I always use that expression with actors. You know, she delivered. And of course, you know, I guess because she's so pregnant, Fargo, she would deliver at some point.
Great segue, Mike. That was a good way to get that in there. So in Almost Famous, she plays the mother of this high school boy who's given the chance to write a story for Rolling Stone magazine and about an up-and-coming rock band and follows them around. It's a small role, but she still registers in it. And then in Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day in 2008, you know, she plays this middle-aged governess who's let go from her job unfairly. And then she ends up, you know, in this glamorous world in the United States advising an American actress and singer. But she plays kind of the Mary Poppins role in that, to me, it's kind of a motherly kind of role. I just want to blaze over those things because definitely watch them if you're a completist. But what I really want to talk about are Olive Kittredge, Three Billboards, and of course, Nomadland. Now, Olive Kittredge is a 2014 4-episode TV series, which she produced, and she plays this middle school math teacher. And it's about this marriage that she has. It spans 25 years. It's 4 different vignettes. And she plays this really awkward, hard to like character, which gives her an opportunity to really branch out in terms of acting, to just sort of sink her teeth into this hard to grasp character that you object to a lot of the things she does and the way she acts. And at the same time, she's still kind of understandable and likable. She still manages to bring that humanity. I don't know how she does it, but you still end up liking her. Did you catch that series, Olive Kittredge?
No, unfortunately I didn't, but everything you're saying is congruent with what we've been saying about her career.
Definitely worth watching, but since we have limited time, let's jump into Three Billboards because I absolutely loved this movie. And to the point you made about, yes, she has been nominated for Best Supporting Actress a few times, which she's never won. But I think all the times that she has been nominated for Best Actress, she has won, which just tells me, you know, you just need to put her, you know, at the top of the ticket because, you know, she dominates the movie when she's in charge of the movie. And Three Billboards was actually written specifically for her. And she is fantastic in it, especially, I would say, as an actress, because, you know, she says, you know, she considers herself an actor and not a movie star. And she says, you know, I've got this rubber face. It's always served me really well and really helps, especially as I get older, because I still have all my roadmap intact and I can use it at will. And in Three Billboards, boy, does she ever not let them dress her up and make her look great. In fact, one of my favorite parts about the movie is that she goes on this date with Peter Dinklage and makes absolutely no effort whatsoever. She doesn't even change out of the ratty outfit she has on. It doesn't even look like she's brushed her hair. And you almost have to admire her for not caring about being a movie star and looking beautiful, because in Three Billboards, she just lets it all hang out.
She really does. She is renowned for a lack of vanity in that respect. She'll play unglamorous characters. She doesn't have a lot of makeup. She's not glammed up with wardrobe. And in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, it's a small independent film. This is a notable thing, that she takes roles in small pictures and wins big awards for doing it. It's also increasingly at the Academy Awards, look who's winning awards, oftentimes for the small independent films, right? And she's riding that wave very successfully. In that film, and you mentioned her as a mother in various roles, in this film, Three Billboards, her character is the mother of a rape and murder victim. I mean, it's a really somber story. It's really grim in a lot of ways. And Frances McDormand has the ferocity as an actor to, you know, she wants justice. She wants to make sure that her voice is heard. She wants to see the right thing done. Boy, you believe every moment of it, don't you? Because as an actor, she's totally committed and she's not worrying about, you know, how's the light on my face? Do I have a nice dress on? How's the hair? You know, all those actorly concerns. Her character wouldn't have any of those concerns. So nor does she. And there are some scenes where it's like, oh my Lord, you know, she doesn't look like a movie star, but this is a movie star who looks on herself. Maria used that quote really well before, that she looks on herself as an actor. And this is a really great role for an actor. And the heck with wardrobe and hair and make all that stuff, you know, just get into that role. And she becomes totally believable. She immerses herself there. And it's sort of a take no prisoners performance. And her best roles, as in Nomadland, they're also like that. And she wins the Academy Award when she does it. I mean, you know, she's won 3 Academy Awards, you know, Best Actress. The only one who could top that is Katharine Hepburn. You know, I mean, she's really at the very pinnacle there in terms of winning the Oscar.
Now, I want to talk about Nomadland because obviously that's the most recent, but I want to mention that she's won the Triple Crown of Acting, an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony because that's very hard to do. And she's in rare company with that. But we are coming to the end. I want to reiterate that I think staunch is the perfect example, a perfect word to describe her. But we only have a couple of minutes left. So Mike, tell our viewers why Nomadland was so great in terms of her performance, which she also produced, by the way. To me, it's like the character from Three Billboards got in a van and then they made the movie about what happened next. But in terms of Frances McDormand's performance in that, give us just the quick and dirty reason why it was so great.
Not only did she win the Oscar as Best Actress, but she also shared in the Oscar for Best Picture. She's one of the producers of that film. So nobody else has done that, really, to be both Best Actress and Best Producer. I love what you just said, that in some ways it's almost like a sequel to Three Billboards, you know, as if you'd then gotten the van and headed west. And again, this is a case where she plays a really, I'll use the word staunch again, but a really strong individual who just, she's a traveler. She wanders, she takes temporary jobs. She intersects and meets various characters. They may only meet once or twice a year, but she is her own person. And you get her backstory, the character's backstory to some extent, but it comes out, you know, she's not a woman of many words, but when she speaks, she pays attention because gradually you piece together what her life has been. It's a tightly controlled performance. It's a tightly disciplined performance. And she's not trying to be glamorous because that is not a glamorous character.
I'm going to leave our viewers with this quote from Frances McDormand. She says, "I don't like awards shows. At our house, we call this time of the year the convention. It's too bad we haven't figured out how to stop it, but I think it will come around because of the internet. I think it will naturally go away. We'll have other ways to gather. It's not going to be this stuff. The shoes hurt too much." And with that, we will sign off. Don't forget to check out our other episodes at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
All right. See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.